A round, veiled woman stands behind a screen. Only her silhouette shows.
Who are you?
You know who I am.
Arabella.
Yes. She steps from behind the screen and joins me at the princess's bedside. She's reed-thin and tall, her limbs swaying as she walks. Her unusual veil is the entire length of her gown, giving away nothing of her outward appearance. What happened to Princess Charlotte? One day she wasn't feeling well, and she went to bed, and never woke up. I glance over her again.
Have you tried...
I have tried it all, she whispers tersely. Nothing I've done has worked. My arcana cannot fix her.
Then why does the queen think I can help?
The papers speak of your legendary feats, she says with curiosity. And I saw what you did in the receiving hall with Sophia's wedding looks. Your arcana are more powerful than mine. They're like nothing I've ever seen before. Her compliment surges through me with a mix of excitement and nerves and concern. I've always felt the same as my sisters. The only difference was that I liked to experiment with my arcana, even if it landed me in trouble. She thinks you can do miracles. She takes your power as a sign that the gods haven't forsaken her child. Arabella sits on the bed and rubs a gloved hand along Charlotte's cheek. Maybe they're right. You might be the only one who can save her. 32. I chase Maman around the perimeter of the forest behind Maison Rouge de la Butte in my nightmares. She's a dream spectre, racing past the naked trees, her red hair aflame against the darkness. My bare feet find every discarded twig and branch on the forest floor.
Maman! I shout behind her. Wait for me!
She looks over her shoulder and smiles, leading me farther in. I ask her what to do about Charlotte and the Queen.
I need help.
She stares back at me.
Tell me what to do. They say I can use my arcana to heal, I shout.
What do you think? Maman asks without turning around, but instead ventures deeper into the forest, dodging massive roots poking out of the dark soil.
I don't know, I say, almost catching up, but she turns left, just out of reach. I need you to tell me what to do.
I can't. You have to decide for yourself.
But what would you do?
I stop to catch my breath. It doesn't matter. Her words dig under my skin like pinpricks. You have to decide for yourself. It is you who must live with the outcome.
What if I die?
Do what is right, always.
Camille.
Camille! A hand jerks my shoulder. I startle awake and jump at the sight of Ivy's dark veil leaning over me.
I need to talk to you. Get up, quickly.
Her whispers are panicked.
What is it?
I rub my eyes.
What time is it?
Just after the midnight star. The staff have gone to bed. I sit up. Ivy hands me a fur-lined robe and points at satin slippers on the floor. She lights a heat lantern and tugs its thick ribbons. My nightmare still hums through me.
Come.
Where are we going?
Shh.
She takes my hand in hers. It trembles. I squeeze it tight to keep my own hand from quivering. We tiptoe down the hall. Dim night lanterns float overhead, bathing our footsteps in light. The marble floor holds the cold, pushing it up through my slippers. Ivy eases open the solarium door. A garden of bell roses reaches up toward a dark sky, their petals large and rich as sunshades, their thorns glistening like arrows. We step into the chilly garden, crusted over with a layer of frost.
Why? Whisper, so your voice doesn't carry.
She takes a deep breath. Rose vines push from their pots, curling and lengthening to create a thick and thorny arbor over our heads. Ivy is manipulating them. The bell rose petals bloom so big we're now inside a pavilion of flowers, shielded from the solarium's glass walls. The heat lantern bobs between us. I warm my hands under its fiery belly.
You can't do what the Queen asked. It's too much, she whispers. I didn't say yes. You have to say no. I thought maybe I should try. The Queen's desperate voice is a sharp memory alongside Maman's dream advice. Do you understand how our arcana work? Yes, of course. We study. If you truly did, you would have said no immediately. This could warp your blood proteins. The arcana are meant to beautify. The goddess of beauty blessed us with them to help enhance people's natural templates. The templates she gave them, buried deep below the grey. They are not meant to heal like medicine. What if I worked on her organs, made them youthful again? Perhaps there's some failing within her body that keeps Charlotte in this sleeping sickness. You think Arabella hasn't tried that already? The Queen is looking for more from you. Ivy starts to pace. Your showing off made her think you're a miracle worker, made her think the arcana can be used in unintended ways. But only the God of Life can control sickness and death, not us. I think of how Maman accidentally killed a woman. If we can bring about death, then why not life? But what if it can? The Queen thinks Sophia will destroy the kingdom, ruin lives. Is my life not worth the lives of so many others? Don't you think we should find out? No, I think you should leave. The word crashes through the garden like a bolt of lightning. Leave? I stare at her, unsure if I understand exactly what she means. Yes. I can't leave. Where would I go? I worked so hard to get here. All I ever wanted was to be the favourite. I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to help. I thought the same thing. It's what Du Barry wants you to believe. It's what the world tells us we should be. She puts a finger to her lips and turns to the solarium door. I hear something. My heart pumps hard, each beat fueled by panic. When Ivy faces me again, she lifts her veil, and I take a step back, holding in a gasp. Her skin is a patchwork of colours, grey, white, beige, and wrinkled like a paper sack. Her lips resemble two leeches puffed up from gorging on blood. Her eyes have drifted toward the corners of her face, giving her the appearance of a fish. Some days are better than others, and my arcana can repair it. But tonight is a bad one. What happened? Sophia, she says, biting back tears. I overused my arcana to please her. Now they are forever unbalanced. The proteins are unable to regenerate and keep me beautiful. Our arcana help us maintain ourselves, too. They keep us alive. I touch Ivy's cheek. The skin feels like clotted cream. Can I fix it? A tear escapes one of her eyes. Not without damaging your own gifts. She drops her veil. But thank you. And it's not always this bad. Only after I've used the arcana. My eyes will drift back into place after a few hourglasses. She touches my shoulder. You can't let this happen to you. You have to get out of here. Where would I go? Back home? And even if I did, the Queen would just bring one of my sisters to court to try to help Charlotte. I have to find another way. Ivy clenches her fists. You're not listening. She storms toward the garden door, shrinking the bellrose stems and returning the swollen petals to their original size. Ivy! I call after her. She doesn't return. I linger in the garden alone. My thoughts are a tangle of Ivy's words, the Queen's request, Sophia's tinkling laughter, and her worries about being beautiful. How the Queen spoke about Sophia as selfish, jealous, and spiteful. And the ways in which Sophia and I are alike. The reasons line up next to each other like matching pairs of earrings. Both of us want to please our mothers. Both of us want to be the best. Both of us want respect and adoration. Maybe if I can't heal Charlotte, I can help Sophia be a better version of herself. Maybe that's the answer. Make her a better future queen. I can't give up, I call out, hoping Ivy is still somewhere near.
What are you doing out here?
I whip around and find Remy in the solarium. I couldn't sleep, I lie. And what's your excuse?
My nightly security round.
He holds the door open as I step through, toting the heat lantern. We stand in the hallway. I'm buzzing with questions and indecision. I'm not ready to go back to bed. Have tea with me, I ask, then immediately want to take it back. If you're busy, then never mind. I can just... He pauses. I wait for him to say no. He opens and closes his mouth two times before saying...
Yes, all right.
Meet me in the tea salon. He nods. I take the heat lantern and go to a smaller room beside the main salon. I pull three night lanterns inside. Their light illuminates two low tea tables and mauve papered walls and cream floor cushions. I tug a string on the wall and a woman appears from behind a panel. Yes, miss? Could I have tea? Enough for two. And would you mind lighting the fireplace? Yes, of course. She bows and disappears. Remy returns. His boots clomp against the floor as if he's stomping bugs. You're quite noisy for this time of night, I say. He grumbles and sits on the floor pillow across from me. The woman returns with a tea cart and pours us both a cup. Thank you, Remy and I say in unison. I laugh. He fights away a smile. She lights a fire, and the bright flames cast shadows across his deep brown skin. We sip tea in long stretches of silence. Whenever one of us can't bear it any longer, we ask the other a question. What is your favourite season? Do you miss home? Do you have a favourite sister? If I was sitting with Auguste, the conversation might never stop. But when the quiet expands and the tea grows cold, my thoughts return to the Queen and Princess Charlotte, and Ivy's fears. This is the time of night when I miss my sisters the most. Whenever one of us had a problem, we'd wait until our mothers were sound asleep and Dubarry's snores roared through the belly of the house. Then we'd slip out of bed, sneak onto the veranda, and climb up on the roof. We'd lie there lined up like snow owls, staring into the heavens and talking out whatever trouble Adel had gotten herself into, or Valerie's newest upset about being left out, or Amber's anxious nerves over her lessons. We'd entertain Hannah's latest fantasy of kissing someone, or Padma's worries about the babies in the nursery, or my daydreams of seeing the world, or what might be in the dark forest behind our house. They'd argue back and forth about what I should do. But I was never alone. I steal glances at Remy. The silver streak down the crown of his head almost glows as the night lanterns sail over us. I remove the small mirror from beneath my gown and finger it. I wish I could find a way to use it, to see what his reflection holds, to see if I can trust him.
What's that?
He points to the mirror. Nothing. I take a chance. Actually, can I ask you a different kind of question?
It depends on what kind.
I force a laugh at Remy's attempt at humour. How would you respond if someone asked you to do something dangerous? He sets down his teacup. His eyes narrow, and somehow his perfect posture becomes even straighter.
Dangerous how?
I search for the right word. Something that could make you sick.
Why would anyone ask you to harm yourself?
What if it could save a life?
Is the person being asked you?
No, I lie. Of course not. I need to advise one of my sisters on whether she should complete a specific beauty request for one of her clients. He nods, but I can't tell if he believes me. Clients ask bells to do many things, I add.
I suppose.
What would you do?
People have duties. She's been tasked, like you, with a massive responsibility, and has vowed to fulfill a specific obligation. but none of those obligations require risking one's life. That is the role of a soldier. Is your sister changing professions?
Of course not.
Then she can set boundaries, he says.
That's another way of saying no. Can you say no to the House of War?
Soldiers take a vow to protect Orléans to the death. I can't, but your sister can.
I want to tell him that refusing Du Barry, the beauty minister, clients, and most of all, the Queen or Sophia, feels impossible.
No one is a prisoner.
He takes a sip of tea.
Even you have the power to make your own choices.
His words burn and crackle like the logs on the hearth. 33. Today is Maman's birthday. All the mother's birthdays. 40 days after the last warm day, deep into the windy season. I set her mortuary tablets on my vanity. I place her bell book beside them and trace my finger over her portrait on the cover. Maman, what would you do? I whisper. Help the Queen? I wait to hear her voice. Silence. I open her bell book and comb through entries that mention the Queen. It's so strange, knowing that my mother dealt with the same Queen every day that I deal with now. I wonder how Maman felt about Her Majesty. I wonder if the Queen liked her. Date. Day 96 at court. The Queen was angry today, more than I'd ever seen before. The newsies buzzed about her inability to get pregnant. When I went to her chambers, she had all the papers strewn over her tables, the ink scattering and reassembling, hollering their scandalous headlines. The tattlers and newspapers had released cameo portraits of the Queen's sisters and their newborns. They say she is desperate to birth an heir. The worst of them claim she might replace the king, or use another man to father her bloodline. Everyone at court knew that she preferred the company of her lover, Lady Zurie Pelletier, but securing an heir had become her cabinet's top priority. She felt the pressure. I sat in the corner of her chambers for 3 hourglasses. I waited for her to tell me she was ready for beauty work. She paced so furiously, I thought she might put a hole in the fur rug beneath her feet. She threw vases and bell products and her own shoes. When exasperated and out of things to pummel against the wall, she turned to me and said, "Get rid of my anger. Make it go away. He won't lie with me. He says my temper is too much. He says I lack patience with him because he's not Zurie." She yanked me from my chair and dragged me to her treatment salon. I pressed my fingers along her spine, pushing my mana arcana deep inside her. For hours and hours she had me drain her temper from her, like how the leeches remove the toxins from our blood. She never felt like it was gone. I worked on her for 3 days straight. She wouldn't let me stop for meals or to rest. Leeches crawled over my limbs to help me push through, and I had to eat pastille cakes and skin color pastes to quiet my stomach. "This can't be, Queen Celeste. It doesn't sound like the person I know." Her gentle brown eyes and slow smile flicker in my memory. I reread the passage twice. Bree tiptoes up to my desk. I press Maman's book to my chest. "Didn't mean to startle you." She sets down a fresh stack of newspapers, scandal sheets, and tattlers, plus a shiny beauty scope.
"These just arrived."
"Thanks." I smile at her. She rushes off. I thumb through the papers. Headlines pulse and flash. "Patrons leave the glass tea house with gilded hair and permanent makeup." "Beauty lobbyists meet with the Queen to petition for an ease on beauty restrictions and toilette box allotments." "Making organs more youthful to be outlawed by the Queen in favour of natural deaths." "Willowy frames and dainty hands, the most requested look." "Fashion Minister's new dress collection boasts new vivant dresses made of living things like butterflies." "Queen changes law.
allows boy to reveal true self and transform into a girl at Maison Rouge de la Butte.
Camellia, correspondence is here.
Bree guides a massive rose petal pink post balloon into my bedroom. The princess's royal emblem blazes brightly on its side. Two cream-colored ribbons hold a dress box. I open the back of the balloon. Sparkles rain down at my feet. I slip out a sealed letter and read aloud. Your presence is requested by Her Royal Highness Princess Sophia in her chambers in an hourglass's worth of time. I open the dress box. A windy season tea dress stares up at me with a handwritten note that says, "Wear me." The plum silk and tulle are the shade of a fresh bruise.
"What is it, Lady Camellia?"
Bree asks. Her voice squeaks and she clears her throat before continuing.
"Do you not like the dress?"
"No, it's beautiful," I say. She takes it out of the box and holds it up.
"The princess has excellent taste."
"What do you think of her?"
"Who, my lady?"
"The princess, Sophia." She shudders.
I
take the dress from her. "What is it? Tell me."
"I'm not supposed to have opinions of royalty. I'm supposed to do my job."
She turns to fuss with the dress and make sure it doesn't get a single wrinkle while draped across the bed. "But if you did, what would it be?" I step closer to her.
"The servants call her La Chat, my lady,"
she whispers. "Why? Cats are sweet."
"Not always. At least, not the teacup ones. It's just that Her Highness loves you one day and hates you the next."
"Temperamental," I say.
"Worse. Cats cuddle you when they want something and will scratch your face when you don't give it to them."
"Give me an example," I say.
"Last year, one of the servant girls, Aria, was put in a starvation box by the princess. She had been a favoured servant of the royalty. She got to wear that purple pin on her uniform. The princess would shower her with extra gifts, beauty tokens, food, and allow her to travel as her companion on trips to palaces in the other isles."
"And? What happened?" Bree sighed before continuing.
"One day, the princess said Aria's eyes were too beautiful for a servant girl, even though Aria maintained the beauty restrictions for servants. She accused her of getting additional work done and put her in the box for 3 days. She had her eyes pecked out by birds. She almost died."
My stomach lurches. A chill settles over me. Sophia cannot become queen. Bree slips her hand in mine.
"Please don't ever tell anyone I told you that. I could be..."
"Don't worry." I stare into her eyes to reassure her. Tiny hints of red push against the warm, sepia brown of her irises. A grey tinge lingers beneath her pink-white skin, and more stubble dots along her chin. "Let me refresh you." I touch her face lovingly.
"I couldn't."
"You will." I lead her to my vanity and force her into the seat. Her mouth fights away a grin. She sinks into the high-backed chair. I grab a pot of Belrose tea from the tea room and bring her a cup. She sips and smiles. "Close your eyes." I open my beauty cas, remove a bay powder bundle, and find a skin pot colour that matches hers. I cover her face with the skin paste. I slip my mirror from inside my dress. I quickly push the pin into my finger and wipe the blood on the base of my mirror. I watch it climb, willing it to go faster. The rose turns red and twists into its message, "Blood for truth." I examine her. The glass fogs. Then it reveals her smiling face bathed in a halo. Her loyalty reflects in the glass like a warm sun. The confirmation surges through me. I restore her skin colour, add more freckles to her nose and cheeks, and deepen the brown of her eyes. I touch the light stubble on her chin and cheeks.
"Do you mind?"
she starts to ask. I smile at her and touch her face, pulling the short hairs out and killing the roots of them. Those hairs won't come back again, I say.
Thanks,
she whispers. I add a small dimple, like mine, to her cheek as a bonus.
Do you like the new dress?
Sophia asks as she flits around her boudoir in a sheer bathing gown. Her legs and hands twitch, and she fights to keep herself still. Wire-rimmed glasses sit on a wide nose, and her deep-set hazel eyes are two pools of sadness. She reminds me of a flower that's lost all its petals. Her hair tower is a frantic mess of tangles and jewels. Old makeup rings her eyes and lingers on her cheeks. It's pretty, I say.
Spin for me.
I do a careful turn. Unease fills me. Sophia cannot be queen. Sophia is unfit. Sophia is temperamental. The dress folds release a tiny melody each time I move.
Isn't it a lovely sound?
She leaps around to the beat of it.
I'm working with the fashion minister to make a line of dresses that sing. This is my first attempt.
Very clever. I don't tell her Remy teased me on the entire walk to the chambers, calling me a pavilion belle.
I need to make sure I take fashion to a new place, too. My mother is not a very fashionable queen. Her dresses are always rather dull. I will commission gowns the likes of which the world has never seen.
She digs into her vanity, throwing creams and puffs and tonics and perfume vials. Glass shatters. I step back as some of the objects fly over my head like shooting stars. Servants rush to clean, but more hit the floor and splatter their contents before the servants can catch them. I shift my weight and try to find the right moment to interject. "Will we be having lunch, Your Highness?" I ask tentatively. She pauses.
"I've planned a windy season picnic. It's partly a date with another one of my suitors."
I wait for her to say Auguste's name.
"Ethan Laurent from House Marania."
I smile with strange, unexpected relief. She returns to lobbing beauty products.
"But I just can't find..."
She jerks upright.
I can't seem to remember what it is I was looking for.
She stares at the ceiling. Servants duck and dart around her, trying to sweep up her mess. Sophia stands in front of her vanity.
I look horrendous, favourite. I need you. I was up too late.
She reaches out her hand. I hesitate before taking it.
Fix me.
I must change into my work dress.
No, I want you as beautiful as possible while you work on me. Perhaps it'll inspire you.
We go to her treatment salon. Can we send for Bree? I need my beauty cast. Sophia snaps a finger at a nearby servant. The woman ducks out of the room. I call out a thank you behind her.
I will go bathe while you set up,
she says. Yes, Your Highness. I double-check the treatment room. Adequate beauty lanterns floating about, a servant setting Belrose tea on the table, pastilles melting on chafing dishes and filling the room with a lavender scent, another servant draping a large bed with pillows and linens, bell products sparkling on tiered trays. I trace my fingers over the fleur-de-lis bell emblems etched onto each item. I remember the first time Amber and I sneaked into the bell product storeroom. After the house had gotten quiet, we stole night lanterns and dragged them to the back of the house. The room's wonders had unfolded to us for hours. Perfume atomizers and color creme cakes and rouge sticks and powders and coal pencils and golden vinaigrettes and pastilles and potpourri and oils and sachets. The room had smelled heady and sweet, and we'd fallen asleep there after powdering ourselves all night. Du Barry made us write 50 lines each as punishment. I wish Amber was here now. What would she tell me to do? Bree arrives with my beauty cass.
I thought you were headed to a luncheon,
she whispers.
So did I. Bree sets it up on a nearby cart and begins the process of unhooking its compartments. Servants usher Sophia back into the room. She guzzles a vial of her specially made Belrose elixir and climbs onto the bed. I pace around, trying to figure out what look I'll give her. An idea wells up. "Face down, please," I say.
"Why?"
Her eyebrows lift in surprise. "I need to get a good look at your hair," I lie. "I want to experiment." Sophia claps giddily.
"You know how much I love to toy with things."
She turns over. I stand at the top of the treatment table. Bree and I work to cover her with bay powder. The weight of my plan is like a solid gold spintria block, heavy with risk. Doubt curls into my stomach, souring it with anxiety. I brush her hair down her back. I lighten the strands to the color of snow and add streaks of silver and embed diamonds. I paint her in a new skin tone, the color of freshly laid eggs. The second Arcana awakens. I freckle her body with beautiful beauty marks. Goddess of beauty kisses. She grunts, and sweat dots her skin. "Are you all right, Your Highness?" I pretend to fuss with the metal rods used to shape the contours of her face and body.
"Yes, proceed," she whispers.
I motion to Bree to lift her hair. Bree's shaky hands gather the new strands. Sophia's spine curves beneath her skin, visible on her skinny frame. The first Arcana awakens inside me at the sight of it. I think of Maman's entry about the Queen. A poor manner can be leached out of anyone. I take a deep breath. I nudge my fingers lightly into the back of her neck. Her soft skin warms beneath my fingertips. I push out her temper, plucking it from inside her like a weed in a garden, and plant the virtues of patience and serenity. Sophia screams out and leaps up. Her sudden movement knocks me to the floor. "Are you in pain, Your Highness? Is everything all right?" I scramble to my feet. A servant hands her another vial of her elixir. She brushes it away.
"I'm just..."
Her eyes blink and her head moves left and right as if she's having some sort of conversation with someone who isn't there.
"I'm done for today. You can leave."
She doesn't look at me. She doesn't even ask for a mirror.
"But goodbye, favourite."
Servants sweep me out of the room like dust. My pulse races with panic and worry and fear. She knows what I was trying to do. 34. The next day, the salon doors burst open with a flourish. I brace myself for the beauty minister, Dubarry, or even Sophia herself, with a reprimand for trying to soften Sophia's manner without her consent. But the fashion minister barrels in, followed by his team of dandies, and a wardrobe closet with massive carriage-like wheels. Its white birchwood sides remind me of my bell trunk, but its gilded edges and damask pattern allow it to blend in with the rest of the luxurious room.
"My little doll,"
the fashion minister cries out. He lifts me out of my chair and twirls me around and around, no doubt inspecting my day dress. His false hand presses into my back.
"Not too fast," I say.
He chuckles.
"Yes, no more losing your stomach. And, looks like you've missed me. At least your body and sense of fashion have."
I smile. "Where have you been?"
"Locked in a tower, forced to make dresses for the rest of my years."
He kisses my cheek.
"I've been at the dress bazaar, trying to settle on the proper fabric for Princess Sophia's wedding gown. I have to match your glorious feet from that day in the receiving hall somehow."
His team wheels the wardrobe closer. I blush at his compliment. "Perhaps I can help you." He blows me a kiss.
"Firstly, I have a few special gifts for you."
"For what occasion?"
"No need for an occasion, doll. You are the favorite. It's an honor to dress you."
The wardrobe doors open and the interior explodes with colour. Dresses with full skirts, A-line cuts, empire waists, sheaths, long sleeves, cap sleeves, no sleeves, V-necks and scoop necks and plunging necklines. Dresses made of brocades, laces, velvets, glass beads, cashmeres, silks, and pastel satins in every colour and pattern. Special carts follow the wardrobe, carrying vivant dresses inside large glass bell jars. These are dresses made of living things. Butterflies open and close their wings, exposing their dresses' inner ribcage. Honeybees buzz in and out of a honeycomb-shaped gown. Roses of every colour wave their petals. Elizabeth slips from her office and approaches the wardrobe jars with widened eyes. She stretches out her fingers, mesmerized.
"Don't touch, little Du Barry," the minister says, bopping her hand lightly. "Those are not for you."
I can't help but laugh at her pinched expression.
"Show some respect. Those are for the favorite. They are gowns and dresses befitting the most important person in the kingdom, aside from the king, queen, and princesses, of course."
He bows and then shows me each frock one by one, much to Elizabeth's chagrin. She scowls as they're presented like delectable pastry treats.
"What do you think?" he asks.
"You've outdone yourself." His eyes light up.
"I know."
We laugh.
"You must wear one tonight."
He pulls an invitation from his pocket. A mix of gold and black calligraphy announces, "Sophia's card party." Glittery stars gleam on the parchment, holding the promise of excitement. He takes my hand and twirls me once more.
"You won't get sick again, will you?"
"No, I've learned my lesson," I say, blushing. We dance, swaying back and forth to the noise of people moving in and out of the apartments. He leans close to my ear, whispering,
"I've been hearing good things about you, favorite. You are loved by our princess. She believes you can do anything and everything, that you could possibly bring the goddess of beauty herself down from the heavens."
"I..."
"Don't give me any flowery excuses."
He smiles.
"You've been giving the princess just what she wants. Wise plan for now. But don't let your flame burn out, little beauty. You'll be in trouble."
He turns me once more, taps his cane on the ground, and then kisses me goodbye.
"Time to go."
Remy walks Elizabeth and me down the 6 flights of stairs and through the grand entry hall to the south wing. I'm wearing one of the fashion minister's latest creations, a honey and marigold bustle dress with a waffle texture and a waist sash of striped fur. My bell bun is adorned with snow-white pearls to complement it. The halls hold decorations for the upcoming Declaration of Heirs ceremony. Cameos of Sophia's face mark night lanterns. Her favourite flowers have been made into garlands. Vendors sell dolls in her likeness, fitted with a tiny version of the Queen's crown. 5 days until the kingdom-wide celebration. 5 days left to decide how to answer the Queen. Newsies are swarming the halls, sending out black post balloons full of gossip. Sparklers are bursting overhead. Night lanterns oscillate with bright colours. Courtiers are wearing cold-themed headdresses and hats, adorned with snow-flecked branches and holly berries, owl feathers and foxtails. Everyone is eagerly anticipating the first snow. Bubbly, jewel-toned liquid fills their glass flutes and tumblers. Some lift up ear trumpets to listen to the conversations happening in the halls. Men chase women down corridors, and laughter and spirited chaos ensue. Remy grumbles and then guides us through the pockets of people.
"This way."
He pushes aside an eager newsie wanting to sketch my picture.
"Not now. You know the rules."
The newsie ignores his request. He moves one pen on his small pad and 3 others sketch alongside it. The picture is complete before I can take 2 steps forward.
The doors of the Royal Game Salon open for us. The ceiling arches in jutting curves and slopes. Night lanterns rub along its surface, bathing the enameled decor in light. The room spills over with sounds of clinking glasses and tumbling dice and whooshing table lanterns and hissing candles and laughter. So much laughter. Plush tabletops display porcelain boxes studded with gold and diamonds and precious gems. Game chips line a wall behind a kiosk labelled Banker. Chaises and high-backed chairs and claw-footed sofas circle the game tables, which spill over with candles, desserts, and pastel-coloured gambling chips. People stuff their mouths with treats and blow onto game pieces for luck.
"Keep up," Remy says over the din.
Women smile and coo and wave their fans in my direction.
"I guessed it would be you," one calls out. "So happy to win, even if late."
"I made back my 40 lees in the lottery now that you're here.
I picked you from the beginning," another calls out.
I smile and wave. Elizabeth giggles beside me.
"We're going to make a ton of spintria, Camille, and Mother will be proud of me."
She grabs for my hand and I jerk away. "I will make a ton of spintria," I say. A cold wind follows courtiers through the doors leading from the Royal Game Salon dock. The moon winks light across the golden pier. Canal boats float like jewels on the dark water. Men and women from merchant houses enter, displaying their family's wares on their clothes, in their hair, or even embedded in their skin. Women wearing House of Spice dresses leave tiny trails of cinnamon and anise and saffron, and those from the House of Inventors are outfitted in gowns covered with silkscreen pictures of their newest products. Men are donning House of Bijou top hats, indented with chambers to display pearls and rubies and sapphires. Princess Sophia's game table sits dead center in the room. Hand-painted plates boast a kaleidoscope of patisserie and petit cakes pierced with flaming sparklers. Champagne bubbles over a tower of stacked glasses into a small golden well. Courtiers dip their flutes into it. Sophia bounces up and down in a high-backed chair, sipping from two goblets while a woman fans her. Her teacup elephant, Zoe, sits in her lap, stealing sips from her glass and nibbling the strawberry on her petit cake. Sophia laughs and directs her teacup monkey, Singe, to roll the die for her on the circular board that hooks around the champagne flute tower. Hand-drawn boxes circle the center of the board and hold brilliantly colored numbers, 1 through 70.
"Your Highness," Elizabeth says, bowing, "I have the favorite, Camellia Beauregard, here as requested."
Elizabeth pulls me forward. I lower my head.
"You look well," Sophia says.
"As do you." She's changed her look from the one I gave her. A halo of tiny blonde corkscrew curls bounces up and down on her shoulders. I push down worries that she knows what I tried to do in our last beauty session. Her ladies of honor stare. Sophia waves for a chair to be brought for me.
"Sit, sit, and watch. I'm on my second official date with suitor number one, Alexander Dubois from House Berry."
He nods. He is feeding Singe grapes and grins at Sophia with a gap-toothed smile. His hair almost matches hers tonight, long and blonde with a hint of a curl. But his skin is the same warm brown as mine, and Sophia is as pale white as the porcelain dye she clasps in her hand. Gossip swirls around me. Lady Hortense Belair is rumoured to have fleas and mice living in her dreadful wig, while Countess Isabel Favreau has no beauty tokens, so she's taken to kissing Fabienne, a well-known dandy, for spintria. Gabrielle lifts a smelling box to her nose when a courtier woman comes to say hello to Princess Sophia. She shakes it to release some of its lavender and lemon scent. The woman scampers off near tears. Princess Sophia claps her hand to gather the attention of her game table.
"Singe is the banker, Place your bets.
Courtiers slam colourful gambling tokens on various numbers. The teacup monkey stamps his tiny feet and points at the velvet bag beneath them. Hands move even more quickly, tossing chips on the game board.
Singe, all bets are placed.
Sophia sits back with a smile. Singe unclasps the bag's strings and disappears inside of it. The players await his return. The woman to my left holds her breath. The bag rustles, then Singe's head reappears. He flashes all of his teeth and leaps forward onto the ledge in front of Sophia.
Zoe, take the ticket,
Sophia commands the teacup elephant in her lap. Zoe drops her strawberry and trundles forward to the edge of Sophia's voluminous gown. She reaches out her tiny grey trunk. Singe hands her the ticket.
Good girl, Zoe. Such a good petit, Sophia says. You follow directions so well.
She smiles at me as she takes the ticket.
Number 26, she announces. Whoever bet on 26 receives 64 times their stake. That's my number,
a young woman shouts from the far end of the table. Singe dances along the table's edge. The young woman barrels through the thick crowd.
Excuse me, pardon me. It's one of Madame Pompadour's triplets. I should have been able to smell her coming,
Sophia says to Gabrielle and others nearby. Courtiers chuckle. The young woman bounds forward with an eager smile. A perfume atomizer sits atop her brunette head like a grand hat. It spits perfume every few moments. A person behind her sneezes. Pomander perfume beads coil around her corset like interlaced chains, and her waist sash is swallowed by a stitched advertisement, Viva la Pompadour! She's from the mercantile house of perfumers, affectionately called Lenez. Sophia fans her nose, and Singe covers his.
My, my, Astrid, aren't we smelling lovely this evening?
The group laughs.
Mother says she wanted the whole court to preview our new line of scents, just in time for the Queen's presentation of toilette box allotments for the new year.
Astrid blushes and jumps with excitement, seemingly ignorant of Sophia's jokes.
She will be so pleased to hear you compliment and to hear about my winnings. How much? How much?
Nearby ladies cup their hands to each other's ears and whisper and giggle and frown at Astrid Pompadour. My stomach squeezes.
A question first, Sophia says.
Anything, Your Highness?
Astrid replies with a bow. Sophia turns to me, then touches my hand. The unexpected touch makes me leap.
Do I frighten you, Camellia?
Sophia smiles, a slow teacup tiger reveal of teeth.
No, Your Highness, I just...
Just... What?
Everyone listens and watches. You startled me. Her Lady of Honor, Gabrielle, whispers something in her ear. Her gaze fixes on me once more.
My favorite, I have a question. What do you think of Astrid? Her looks, that is?
I turn my head like it's on a slow swivel. Astrid grins at me. Bright pink rouge stick stains her teeth, and the face powder she has used doesn't mask the tiny grey tint in her skin. Grey strands streak her hair, though she's cleverly tried to cover them with beeswax and pomatum.
She's lovely, I say.
Astrid squeals with delight.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, favourite! Blessings to you! I do try very hard with limited...
Silence! Sophia commands. Astrid swallows the last bit of her sentence and her happy giggle. Laughing courtiers button their lips. A hush falls over the entire game room. Hands freeze over tables. Mouths are afraid to chew their contents. Dice and game chips dig into palms instead of being placed on lucky bets.
Have a closer look, Camellia. You must be too far away to judge her beauty accurately, Sophia says.
I search Sophia's eyes, trying to understand why she's making me embarrass Astrid in front of all these people. Is this retribution for attempting to change her manner during our session? She waves her hand, pushing me to scrutinize the poor girl. A servant lifts the seat under me. I almost topple forward. Her ladies of honor, Gabrielle and Claudine, snicker at the mishap. My feet fill with lead, and moving each one forward feels like it takes an hourglass's worth of time. The mirror hidden deep in my corset warms against my skin. I'm face to face with Astrid. She smiles again. My own smile in response is weak.
"What do you see, Camellia?" Sophia says. "It can't be anything lovely. Not in the least."
Astrid's face crumples. Her mouth pulls down with sadness, her eyes dart around. Courtiers whisper their agreement with Sophia's statement.
"Your Highness, I hope I have done nothing to offend you, but if I have, my sincerest apologies,"
Astrid stammers out. A deep sweat rushes down her brow, taking her face powder with it. The tinge of grey in her skin is more visible now.
"You have offended me," Sophia declares.
Gabrielle hands Astrid a scandal sheet called Sir Daniel's Dastardly Delights. The vulgar words race along the page as if they're afraid of all the candlelight in the room. The pictures morph into a dozen lurid scenes and capture the salacious rumours circulating the kingdom this week.
"Extinguish a few of the candles so the ink will settle," Sophia says.
Servants reach long-handled duters overhead and snuff out a few flames. Others herd night lanterns into faraway corners. A candle is brought right beside Sophia. She places it on the game table ledge. It illuminates her face but casts shadows in her eyes. She clears her throat. She's terrifying.
"Your offences, Astrid Pompadour, are enormous. There's the slovenly way you, and your sisters, I might add, carry yourselves and embarrass Orléans and your merchant house, Lenez. And there's the fact that your mother is rumoured to be my father's latest mistress."
A roaring gasp rushes through the room. My hand cups my mouth. Astrid shakes her head.
"She is not. Your mother is quite glamorous. I don't know why she lets you parade around court looking a mess. Maybe all the family spintria are spent on her."
"She isn't."
"Your assurances and promises mean nothing to me. I've had it on good authority that she is."
She reaches for a platter of strawberries and dips one into the bubbly liquid in her flute.
"Camellia, she must have a new look, to match her harlot of a mother."
She waits for my response. Fear flashes in Astrid's eyes. The words stick in my throat.
"Don't you agree?"
I want to walk away. I will my legs to move. They shake instead, remaining fixed in place like deep roots. Astrid stares at me, her pupils dilated, tears brimming over at the edges.
"I'm waiting," Sophia says. "I demand an answer."
"Of course she does," Elizabeth blurts out.
I glare at her, and her eyes plead with me. Astrid's breathing accelerates. "If you say so, Your Highness," I say. Her mouth curves into a grin.
"Yes, I do say so. I do."
She pops up from her chair and hands Claudine her teacup elephant. Claudine keeps her gaze low. Sange leaps from the game table and onto her shoulder. Sophia circles Astrid and waves the scandal sheet in the air. I spot a few words and phrases. Madame Pompadour, mistresses of the king, shameful. Disgrace on Lenez. Sophia takes a deep breath and beckons for us all to mimic her. The room sucks in a collective breath.
She exhales. The whole room sighs.
I smell a pig.
That's what?
She touches my shoulder.
Give her a face, befitting one.
Astrid cries out.
Oh, please don't, she begs, cowering. Please, Your Highness.
Guards lift her arms and force her upright. Your Highness, I couldn't possibly. I don't have my cass, the Belrose tea, my accoutrements, I say in panic.
She's right, Princess Sophia, Your Highness, Elizabeth adds. Beauty work must never be done without those items.
Sophia whips around.
It can, and it will.
Please,
Astrid cries out again.
Shut your mouth, Sophia says.
Astrid bites her bottom lip, desperate to hold in the sobs. Rouge stick is smeared over her mouth.
Now, Camellia, my favourite. Do it,
Sophia says, returning to her seat to watch.
And not in an hourglass's worth of time, but now.
I purse my mouth to keep it from quivering. I take deep breaths. I search Sophia's face, waiting for her to shout out that this is all a big joke.
Do it,
Sophia hollers.
I order you to, now.
The conversation in the room halts. Eyes settle on me. No one dares to move or talk or take a breath. Sophia's eager stare burns. I close my eyes.
I'm sorry, I whisper. Don't, favourite. I beg of you, don't, Astrid pleads.
Astrid's face appears in my head, her close-set eyes and greying skin and two small lips and beaky nose. The arcana awaken. A rush of heat flashes through me. The veins in my hands swell. I open my eyes. I stretch out the hump on the bridge of her nose like it's a clay model. I dig out more space in her nostrils. I force her bones to twist and the cartilage to fill in. Astrid screams. I stop. I can't do this. I can't. The guards hold Astrid still.
Keep going, Sophia snaps. Do as I say, Camille.
I shape Astrid's flesh into a snout. Tears fill my eyes as she wails.
Add hair, add hair, Gabrielle shouts.
Yes, Sophia demands, bristly hair.
Some of the crowd laugh. Others grimace, no doubt thankful that this isn't happening to them. A few look away. I thicken Astrid's nose hair and lengthen it so it pokes from each nostril like the stubble on a man's chin. Astrid screeches and drops to the ground, slipping from the guard's grasp like a piece of silk. She's a pile of sobs and moans. The guards hustle her back up onto her feet. She presses her hands to her face. A favoured lady courtier yanks them away to reveal her new nose. The snout glistens with snot.
Well done, Camellia. Beautiful. May you always find beauty, Astrid.
Sophia waves the guards forward.
Let's go see what the newsies think. Give them something for their late-night papers.
She leads Astrid, her ladies of honour, and a train of eager courtiers out of the room and into the grand entry hall. She announces that everyone should follow and head for the receiving hall for a night parade.
You must go with them, Remy says, unsticking my feet.
I didn't want to do it, I say.
He is silent, but disappointment is reflected in his eyes.
What was I supposed to do?
None of it is my business, he says, escorting me at the tail end of the group.
In the receiving hall, Sophia marches Astrid up and down the long entryway from the door to the throne platform and back. She commands the musicians to play, and that Genevieve Garreau, the most beloved opera singer in the kingdom, be brought in to sing. Genevieve is taken from bed and shows up in her nightgown. Mise en players pluck their instruments and Astrid is forced to perform peasant dances. Sophia drags in Astrid's two sisters to watch.